WNYV, Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Monday, March 11th. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe.
A group of concerned folks in Saranac Lake meets every week to write letters to the President and Congress urging a ceasefire in Gaza.
I just don't want to personally be involved in more forever wars in the Middle East. And I feel like it's the time to stand up and say war is not the world I want to live in.
The federal government has been teetering on the edge of a shutdown for months, and that's taking a toll on military families whose paychecks are at risk.
We know that military families are struggling to afford housing, are struggling to afford food, so it's really unfair to ask military families to plan for themselves for a shutdown that they can't even prevent.
And a new exhibit from Support Women Artists Now in Malone is deeply personal for curator Tina Lamore, who says she was deterred from being a painter when she was young.
So I found myself many years later going back to school for art. And I think that that's something that is important to me, that you need to follow your heart.
All of that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Adirondack Experience, the museum on Blue Mountain Lake, presenting the Total Solar Eclipse Experience, a once-in-a-lifetime event on Monday, April 8th. Event details at theadkx.org. And by Apothecary Chocolates, making gourmet chocolates by hand from all-natural herbs, botanicals, and tree syrups, apothecarychocolates.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. The war in Gaza has been raging on for more than 5 months. Tens of thousands of people have been killed. The war has sparked a humanitarian crisis in Gaza with reports of famine-like conditions. This conflict between Israel and Hamas has sparked outrage here at home. In Saranac Lake, folks have been meeting every Monday night for months. They write letters to politicians calling for a permanent ceasefire. Emily Russell reports.
Walk into the Adirondack Center for writing on a Monday night, and the place is buzzing. Dozens of people are spread out on couches, sitting together at tables. They're here because of what's happening in Gaza and because of what politicians are and aren't doing about it.
I think I've sent at least 30 emails so far.
That's Emily Bannock. She's been writing to lawmakers for weeks, calling for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Bannock says she's written to Democrats and Republicans, people like President Joe Biden, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, and Senator Chuck Schumer.
Chuck Schumer gave the commencement address when I graduated from SUNY Binghamton in 2019, and he had this whole speech about how young people are empowered and we have futures ahead of us, and so I sort of wrote a letter. I was like, oh, so is it just us? What about, you know, the youths in Gaza? Don't they have a future too?
Since the start of the war, more than 30,000 Palestinians and an estimated 1,400 Israelis have been killed. Children in Gaza are now dying of starvation. Biden and other top Democrats like Chuck Schumer are focused on getting food and other aid to Gaza. They're also seeking a 6-week ceasefire. But Melissa Kiltz, who's here tonight from Lake Placid, says that's not enough.
It just seems like they're saying what we want to hear right now, but their actions are telling us something completely different.
Kiltz and a few others here tonight have actually heard back from one politician, North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. But Kiltz says she was disappointed by Stefanik's response, which focused largely on Israel. Here she is reading from Stefanik's email.
Sorry, it's the second paragraph of the letter. What it says is Israel is one of our strongest allies, and its continued strength and prosperity provide the United States with a unique strategic partner in the Middle East. Over the last 75 years,
Stefanik goes on to say that she'll continue to support military aid for Israel, which has been a bipartisan funding priority for decades. But the current war in Gaza has sparked something in a growing faction of Democrats around the U.S. who are saying enough is enough. Tyler Barton from the Adirondack Center for Writing helps organize these events. He grew up during the Iraq War and says he does not want to see the U.S. keep perpetuating conflicts in the Middle East.
If it goes beyond Gaza, if there are other countries that we're bombing now because we're standing up for Israel, I just don't want to personally be involved in more forever wars in the Middle East. And I feel like it's the time to stand up and say, war is not the world I want to live in.
The mood here tonight is mixed. Folks mostly are just focused on writing letters. One woman is drawing colorful peace signs on some postcards. 23-year-old Frances McClure has been coming to these letter-writing events for weeks. She says it's been a helpful way to learn about and process what's going on in Gaza.
They provide resources here about like current updates every week, which is really helpful, and have some folks that are more closely connected to the cause.
It's unclear how likely a permanent ceasefire is anytime soon in Gaza, or what kind of impact these small-scale efforts have on elected leaders. But here in Saranac Lake, it's clear people want a space for this kind of thing, a shared space to process the war in Gaza and to put their feelings down on paper. Here's organizer Tyler Barton again.
It's trained this muscle in me, and I think in a lot of people, to like make sure that the feelings I have towards issues that we are supporting in America, that I make sure that my representatives know. So I think that's the message that carries forward, is that we're constantly keeping in touch with our elected officials and letting them know what we believe in.
This group will continue meeting every Monday night in Saranac Lake until early April. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio, Saranac Lake.
A former Plattsburgh mayor has announced he'll be running to return to the city's top position come November. Donald Kasperzak previously served as mayor from 2006 to 2014. He was nominated by the city Republican Party and announced his candidacy last Thursday. Kasperzak is 68 years old and served on Plattsburgh's Common Council in the late 80s and early 90s. Plattsburgh's current mayor, Democrat Chris Rosenquist, announced he would not be seeking re-election this November. There are two Democratic candidates vying for their party nomination. They'll face off in a primary on June 25th.
Lawmakers in Albany are hashing out the final details of the 2024 budget. Advocates for older adults say Governor Hochul has proposed too little money for them. NCPR intern Zach Jaworski reports.
The New York State Office for the Aging is set to receive about $200 million in state funding. Statewide advocates want about twice that. Andrea Montgomery directs the St. Lawrence County office.
You know, it's been frustrating for years that aging services haven't been prioritized by the federal or the state government.
The St. Lawrence County Office for the Aging provides medical transportation, meal deliveries, Medicare counseling, legal services, and in-home care support. New York's 65 and older population has increased by 31% over the last decade, according to Spectrum News. 37% of that population lives in poverty. Montgomery says that much of that increasing population does not want to go into a nursing home. She says there needs to be more funding for alternatives.
Home care, housekeeping, you know, home-delivered meals, programs such as that, that can help them stay in their homes.
Montgomery says that putting more money into the state budget for older people is the moral thing to do.
We're not just talking about numbers. We are talking about older adults, about humans. And as I said before, these are the people who raised us. They took care of us. They created the environment and society we are living in now. It is our responsibility to take care of them. We really need to be looking at this and prioritizing aging services.
The final state budget is due April 1st. For North Country Public Radio, I'm Zach Jaworski in Canton.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, we'll talk with one of the organizers of the Support Women Now, Support Women Artists Now, or SWAN events in Malone this month, including a gallery exhibit, drumming circle, and print workshop. That's in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Winter storm warning, winter weather advisories continue for all of the North Country, northern Vermont, the Green Mountains, through 8 o'clock tonight. Chateauguay, Malone, and Northern Adirondack Central Schools are closed for the day. You'll find a list of two-hour delays and any other cancellations on our website at ncpr.org. Heavy snow, blowing or drifting snow, highs today around 30. Northern Light is supported by the Village Mercantile, Saranac Lake, partnering with local nonprofit organizations to sell their merchandise through their e-commerce store. More at villagemerc.com.
Since September, the federal government has been operating under an almost constant threat of a shutdown. Political squabbles have kept Congress from passing long-term budgets, so they've approved a series of stopgap funding bills that last only a few weeks at a time. Among the people most affected are military families, who worry that a shutdown would leave them without paychecks and the government services that they rely on. Steve Walsh reports for the American Homefront Project.
Heather Campbell took a break from volunteering at her children's school to talk about her family's anxiety over another possible government shutdown. The spouse of an Air Force officer, Campbell moved to Virginia 8 months ago.
It's one thing if it happens randomly, but it seems like it's happening more and more frequently. And on the mental load of a family, it's really exhausting.
She estimates the family spent $5,000 out of their own pocket on the move, and they need her husband's steady paychecks.
We know that military families are struggling to afford housing, are struggling to afford food, and we know that each move costs thousands of dollars out of pocket. So it's really unfair to ask military families to plan for themselves for a shutdown that they can't even prevent.
Stopgap bills called continuing resolutions freeze the budget at last year's level, so the Pentagon doesn't have the additional money to fund some of the new quality of life projects passed by Congress, says Corey Titus, a former Army officer and policy director for the Military Officers Association.
Especially if there's a need to start a new project, their hands are definitely tied in ways that they do not need to be right now.
Money to replace and refurbish barracks for young service members and an increase in the housing allowance for troops in expensive areas remains on hold, Titus says.
It hurts service members in ways they don't necessarily realize, because things could be better, regardless of their barracks, their pays, if Congress was able to get their funding bills done on a timely manner.
Troops separated from their families get an extra $250 a month to help with expenses. Congress raised that to $400 in the last defense bill, but the Pentagon hasn't implemented the increase.
That additional $150 when your service member is away at training would make a big difference for a family.
And it's not just the defense budget. More than 200,000 military families qualify for food subsidies under the Women, Infant, and Children, or WIC, program. That's run by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Bessa Pinchotti heads the National Military Family Association.
We're asking more and more of our service members and their families. It's painful to have these conversations with families, not have the answers. I feel like we're banging our head up against the wall.
The situation is worse in Virginia, California, and other places where the cost of living is higher, she says.
We're hearing how military communities are banding together to support each other and families that they know are having a hard time because they don't know where to go for resources, or in a lot of cases, don't feel comfortable raising their hand and saying that they need help.
Multiple shutdown deadlines are coming in March. If Congress can avoid halting critical services or troops missing a paycheck, then the impact may be minimal. But the constant worry can lead some people to consider leaving the military, Pinchotti says.
They know that signing up to do the job is going to be a sacrifice for their family, but we do it every day and we do it for our country. There just comes a point where that sacrifice can't be worth it when you don't know if you're going to be paid.
She says the dire headlines have come up so often that crisis fatigue has set in, because all military families can do is wait. In Norfolk, I'm Steve Walsh.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. Seven people have been arrested on felony drug charges for operating a drug trafficking operation in St. Lawrence County. A month-long investigation was conducted by over a dozen agencies, including Homeland Security, Border Patrol, State Police, and local law enforcement agencies. Two of the seven people arrested are from Brooklyn and are identified as the leaders of the drug ring. The other five are from Ogdensburg and were charged with second-degree conspiracy and third-degree criminal possession. They were all charged in a grand jury indictment that was unsealed last week in St. Lawrence County.
A proposed apartment building in Glens Falls has received preliminary support from the Glens Falls Planning Board. The project, called the Lofts on Warren, would be located at a currently vacant lot on Warren Street. It proposes 60 apartments on three floors above a large commercial space. The Glens Falls Post-Star reports that members of the city's planning board reacted positively to the project design and were supportive of the vacant lot being used for housing. The project site plan is set to be reviewed by the city's zoning board on March 18th. It'll return to the planning board for approval sometime in April.
Last week, a stray cat in Watertown tested positive for rabies. According to Jefferson County's Public Health Department, the wounded cat was found by a member of the public who took the cat to a veterinarian. Three people were exposed to the rabid cat, and all three are undergoing preventative rabies treatment. Rabies is a fatal disease in animals and humans. Positive rabies cases in animals have been identified in many locations across the North Country in the past year. Public Health says getting your pet vaccinated for rabies protects them and you and helps stop the spread of rabies from wild animals to humans.
And Jefferson County is putting more money towards helping people who are homeless in the area. Last week, county legislators proposed passing a resolution. County legislators did pass a resolution shifting about $800,000 of the American Rescue Plan federal dollars towards efforts to aid unhoused individuals. The county housing director told WWNY-TV that the money will be used to set up an emergency response trailer and a pallet shelter, which is a temporary shelter for people to sleep in.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, an art gallery in Malone is celebrating regional women artists this month, and we've gone to check it out. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
A growing list of schools that are closed today because of the heavy snow in some parts of our region. A winter storm warning and winter weather advisory remain in effect for all of our region until 8 o'clock tonight. Blowing and drifting snow as well. Highs around 30 this afternoon. These schools are now closed for the day. Chateauguay, Lake Placid, Malone, and Northern Adirondack and Ellenburg Depot are closed. Two-hour delays at Preston Moira, Clifton Fine, Colton Pierpont, Keene, Northeastern Clinton Central School in Champlain, Salmon River, St. Regis Falls, and Tupper Lake. They're in two-hour delays. Chateauguay, Lake Placid, Malone, Northern Adirondack are closed. And again, snow today, heavy at times. That winter storm warning, winter weather advisory remains in effect until 8 o'clock tonight. Wind gusts out of the west-northwest up to 40, 50 miles per hour. Then partial clearing, and the Weather Service says partly to mostly sunny skies tomorrow with highs in the low 40s. Right now we've got clouds and 28 degrees in Canton.
The works of seven North Country women artists are on display this month at the Downtown Artist Cellar in Malone. It's sponsored by Support Women Artists Now, or SWAN, and the Thrive Project, which promotes community involvement in the arts. The SWAN events this month include exhibits, a community drum circle, and print workshop. The exhibit at the Downtown Artist Cellar, titled Out of the Box, includes paintings, textiles, photos, and found object assemblages. The curated show, quote, pushes the boundaries of conventional artistic expression, says organizers.
I caught up with Tina Lamour last Friday night during the exhibit's opening reception. She chairs the art department at North Country Community College in Malone. March is Women's History Month, and Lamour says this is the first such month-long focus on women in the arts in Malone. In the spirit of SWAN, Support Women Artists Now, the new exhibit explores the unique perspectives and groundbreaking work of seven regional women artists.
Usually if there's an opening, it's painting or featuring one artist or the traditional art events. And we're like, well, let's get a bunch of different artists that are working in different media and put them together. So it's a unique show and probably work that the area hasn't seen, and that's where Out of the Box came into play. That there's a bunch of different mediums being shown and different artists together and that haven't been shown together. So that was really the impetus for that. You know, historically, men have always gotten all the opportunities, you know, male artists, and I thought it was just unique to feature women artists and performers, musicians, poets, anything along those lines, anything creative.
So you're inviting folks to come by DAC over the next month or so and
yes,
really check out some of this amazing art.
Yes, and we have most of the events are here at DAC. We are doing two workshops at the college that are free that will culminate at the end of the month in the Moving Prints exhibition. So the community can contribute prints for that exhibition.
Tell me your art journey and your thoughts when you think about Support Women Artists Now and SWAN, and you've been teaching for a number of years.
Yes. I went back to school for art, so I'm a big proponent of kind of doing what you love to do, because when I was the age of, you know, leaving high school and going to college, wanted to study art but was told that, well, you know, you'll never make any money as a painter. And I think that's a prevalent thing, especially now. There's a lot of emphasis on the trades and working. And so I found myself many years later going back to school for art. And I think that that's something that is important to me, that you need to follow your heart and do what makes you happy. And I never intended to teach. It was really just an exploration for me to dive into it, and but when I was in grad school, I taught, and it's the conversations that you have when you're in class and providing opportunities for students to really get involved and to think beyond what they knew, and that's probably more where my heart is. If I can pass on anything, it would be to do what makes you happy. I think it's critical. I've just seen enough with students where art has opened up even just a form of expression for them that they couldn't say it any other way, and this is how they can say it. That gives me goosebumps. So I've had many experiences like that.
Tell me a bit about what you hope people come away from this exhibit with, Tina, if nothing else. Just a chance to explore art by women.
Absolutely. I've gotten a few phone calls by artists that are out there, women artists. So I think that if we can provide more opportunities like that, and this is a great forum for those discussions and everything, then I'm happy with what we've done. And plus I'm excited for the things that we have going on. We have a visiting artist coming at the end of the month, a printmaker, and she's going to be working with a high school, and she'll be on campus working with our students. And so it's just developed into a really broad experience, I think, that everyone will have for the month. So if, you know, and most events are free, open to the public. It sounds like we're having a good turnout out there. It's just great.
Well, let's get back to the folks who are here visiting Tina. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Tina Lamore chairs the art department at North Country Community College in Malone and is one of the organizers for the Swan Project in Malone. The out-of-the-box exhibit continues through April 6th, and there's more information on the website downtownartistseller.com.
Hey,
sweetheart.
Hey,
hi.
Girls.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hi.
Listen, everybody. I came up with this really great rhythm. Listen to this.
Oh, okay.
Honey in the Rock with an improv, a rhythmic improv. And Sweet Honey in the Rock is on tour this year, and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. Fabulous a cappella women's voices, Sweet Honey in the Rock, celebrating 50 years of great music. And time now coming up on 28 minutes past 8. You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. So many events to look forward to in the region, including a sensory-friendly day at the Wild Center this Friday for individuals and families who prefer a quiet and less stimulating environment. The Wild Center is offering a sensory-friendly day. Sounds will be turned down and tactile sensory-friendly activities will be available. You can get tickets online at wildcenter.org. And find out more at wildcenter.org/calendar.
I just want to say as well that if you miss anything here during Northern Light, check it out online. You can listen back to stories. You can comment on those stories. Share the audio. Check out our archive of regional news and conversations and music. That's at ncpr.org.
And while you're there, you can also subscribe to our other podcasts, including our daily news roundup, Story of the Day, or our storytelling podcast, The Howl Podcast, or our magazine-style show, Northwards, where you'll hear interviews and features with folks in our community that make the North Country a special place to live. You can find out more information all about that at our website, ncpr.org.
We're back to Morning Edition in just a moment. A reminder that there are some schools closed today because of the winter storm. Chateauguay, Lake Placid, Malone, and Northern Adirondack Central School in Ellenburg Depot closed for the day. A winter storm, winter weather advisory in effect for all of the North Country through 8 o'clock tonight. That's it for Northern Light on this Monday, March 11th.
Morning Edition is coming up. Then join us at lunchtime today for a conversation with comic, writer, and actor Julio Torres, who shares how the absurd challenges he faced in the U.S. immigration system inspired his new satiric film, Problemista. Torres is a former writer for Saturday Night Live who immigrated to the U.S. from El Salvador. And we'll hear that conversation on the next Fresh Air between noon and 1 o'clock right here on NCPR. I'm Monica Sandreski.
I'm Todd Mo. Thanks for joining us. Be well.